Hilliard Lyons is proud to become a part of Baird, a trusted financial services firm that shares our commitment to the community. I'm Jeff Main, branch manager with Hilliard Lyons. You can learn more about Baird and our new partnership at HilliardToBaird.com.
It'd be nice to do because it is gorgeous outside, and it's nice to have a reminder of spring, even though we've just started summer last Saturday. Mm-hmm. And as we hit refresh here at 4:06, 78 degrees downtown, could get just a little bit warmer. Feels like 80, so the air is a little bit heavier, but the wind is blowing nicely, a little shade with the clouds. I'm trying to dress this up because it's going to be hot over the 4th of July week and weekend, so I would suggest getting out and enjoying it. 59 tonight does come with a 20% chance of a shower. Tomorrow, 81 and 59, so very similar to today. Warming up on Thursday, 84 and 63. Best chance of rain, though, is only 10% in the next 2 days. Friday, 88 and 72, comes with a 20% chance. 60% chance on Saturday, 83 and 69. We'll close out the weekend on Sunday. I've just lost my 86 and 70, and we will have a chance of rain as well, about 50-50 during the day and Sunday night. Your 4th of July forecast, yeah, it's never too early to look ahead that far. The week will start with scattered thunderstorms. The week will end with 50-50 chances of scattered thunderstorms. Temperatures 87 or better for that entire stretch. Hey, it's summer, 84 and 64, the highs and lows. So we enjoy a day like today when we were just creeping around in the 70s.
I'll take it.
Updated forecast, live radar, find it all at WGCLradio.com. Keith, every Tuesday we check in at City Hall and our guest this afternoon, and every Tuesday afternoon,
we have the mayor of the city of Bloomington, and we've never asked him who on his staff, or is it he, that when that weather is coming at Bloomington and all of a sudden it just dissipates or goes another direction, who does that?
It's Celeste, isn't it? It has to be Celeste. She gets us with trivia. She stymies the weather. What can't that woman do?
I'm not telling. You know, come on. How are you guys doing?
Wonderful. Great to hear from you. And we need to stop that. So if you guys could put in a hold or a stop order on that just for a couple nights here to get everything back to normal, that would be great. We do need rain desperately. But we always appreciate your time, Mayor, for joining us. We've got a full agenda, and I'm going to start first because I know you and Keith have the other things lined up. Every Friday, you meet with a coalition task force or whatever we're going to call it, and I'm not worried about the name, but it is all of the medical heavy hitters from the county and the hospitals, emergency management services, et cetera. And we've seen over the last week or so, counties, or Monroe County, the deaths have gone up in a measure we haven't seen, and the number of cases have gone up in numbers we haven't seen. Is there any indication from any of those players at your meeting of why that took place?
Well, no. The short answer is the data continue to be front and center at what we look at. And while the case numbers and the death numbers have moved, they've gone up some, and it's certainly something we want to continue to watch. The overall picture is not changing dramatically in the sense that our infection rate continues to be very low for those we test. Our hospitalization rate continues to be very low, but you know the hospitalization rate is a real lagging indicator that happens 3 or 4 weeks after you have an eruption of the virus. So that's a real lagging indicator. Test results are quicker, so we really have to watch it all. And you talked about the weather. I have to say, I kind of feel like we're enjoying a beautiful day, but we have weather maps and radar maps and weather forecasters who are saying watch out for what's coming, because we really do need to be careful. You see it around the country, you see it around the world, that you can think you have this thing under control, but then it pops up again. And with Bloomington's expected change in August of tens of thousands of more people coming back from all across the country, you know, we really do need to watch what's happening. And it's one reason wearing masks is so important, physical distancing is so important, and it's really, frankly, why the city and Indiana University are talking very intensively about how do we manage all these new residents who, while on campus, will be very tightly regulated and mandated, but while off campus, we may have state rules and local rules that will be very different. So that is, it's a big challenge, and we got to keep watching the numbers.
So those numbers that you did see with the highest spike in deaths and probably the most aggressive week in cases since the early days, that's something we don't need to be concerned about, in the sense that it doesn't look like, from all the other factors, these will continue. This is maybe the exception to the rule.
Well, our health experts would always tell us, don't obsess about one number.
Okay.
Keep an eye on a bunch of different numbers, and I think that's generally true. But look, you know, we don't want to see a spike in deaths. Some of that can be reporting catching up. Some of it can be assigning a death that happened 4 weeks ago to a county that wasn't assigned before. But look, I'm all with everybody who says we got to be really careful. One of the things I like to remind us all is, if there are relatively low cost actions we can take that significantly decrease the chance that we will have another eruption, then by all means, let's talk about them. And those could include really pushing for more mask wearing, even mandatory if we needed to. And second, really trying to limit what we know are the super spreader events, and that is the combination of lots of people indoors for long periods of time. And maybe we really need to think about trying to reduce those, because if you think about it, yes, I know that's regrettable to have to do that, but if that's what keeps IU open for the year, maybe that's worth it, you know?
And the other part, just following up on the COVID, we'll put a bow on this and move on to other things. I know it's as you mentioned, I don't want to put this in the bottom drawer and forget about it, because, as you just mentioned, students are coming back, things are coming back. Governor Holcomb is going to address the media tomorrow. He has tomorrow and next Wednesday before his grand opening or reopening on July 4th. That's stage five and the final countdown. Play that Bad Europe song in the background. What do you think you will hear from him tomorrow? Because I don't think he's going to put his cards on the table just 2 days before the 4th of July weekend. So I'm guessing here, and go ahead and please tell me if I'm wrong, that we're going to hear some important stuff tomorrow.
Well, I hope we get more notice. The pattern for each of the moves has actually been just 1 or 2 days ahead of the change. He's announced it. So that's what he went from into stage two, into stage three, into stage four. I do think more notice is better, but that's not what he's done so far. I'm not sure what he'll do this year, this cycle. You know, you really, I think it's better to be cautious and not move too fast. We all read the news. We see around the country where opening up and not doing it well can cause a retrenchment, and we just want to be careful. So I hope and trust that he is, and he's listening to the health experts, and we continue to follow the data. I will say the most recent prevalence test, that was a random test of Hoosiers to see who's had the disease or who has the disease presently, showed a decline from the previous test done 6 or 8 weeks earlier. So that's a good thing. And I haven't seen a lot of news coverage of that yet. But so, you know, there's just a whole mix of indicators. And we just need to be careful and keep doing the best we can based on what the science tells us.
And the good thing is, he has said from day one he will allow counties to go stricter if necessary, and gives the 92 counties the freedom to do so. So that has to be good news, because if we don't see eye to eye on everything, home rule should take effect here. Don't you believe that?
Yes, and I give him credit, because that's not been the case for every governor around the country. And I think Governor Holcomb's done well to say, look, if your local circumstances are different, I'm fine with you going a little slower. And I do appreciate that. There are only 3 or 4 counties that have done that, but we're one of them, and it's been important to us.
It's nice to have that flexibility, absolutely.
We're speaking with the mayor of Bloomington, John Hamilton. And Mayor, I want to get real serious here for a second. All over the country, we've got things going on where people are demonstrating, people wanting change, people wanting this and all the other things. One of the big themes across the country is a defund the police. You're the mayor of a city that for the most part works, that most people like what's here. Doesn't mean it's perfect, doesn't mean there aren't some things that could be changed, et cetera, et cetera. But how do you, as the chief administrator of the city, see these kinds of things, and how do you deal with it as the administrator?
You know, when Ferguson, Missouri erupted several years ago, or when any national event happens like that, we feel it in Bloomington. As residents, we see what's happening around the country and we react to that, and that's natural and normal. Even when sometimes we think very differently about our own situation or our own police force. And, you know, this has been no different from that. When George Floyd was essentially murdered by a police officer in broad daylight, that was just too much for people after the litany of other events in Louisville and Georgia and of course, years and years of that. And people said enough is enough. And we have to talk about how to stop this public safety force from being threatening and fatal to some of our neighbors and friends and family members. And so that's a very real and very powerful issue, and one that we need to deal with in Bloomington and every place needs to deal with. And, you know, I always remind in any setting, we are not immune. Bloomington is not immune. We have a history of racism that runs deep and long in our community, from housing to education to health to law enforcement. And we have made a lot of progress, and I can talk about a lot of the good things that our public safety officers and outstanding individuals have done in terms of training and equipment and approaches, and we can go into all that, but we never can feel like we can rest on where we are. And so, you know, when I came into office, one of the first things I did was ask the police department to very exhaustively and intensively review the 21st century policing report, which came out of Ferguson under the Obama administration and had 50 some recommendations. I said, make sure we really understand where we are on all this. And they did. And they did that with the Board of Public Safety. And that helped us. But we're doing it again. We're going to be listening to people who say, what are your rules about shooting at a moving vehicle? Let me just give you one example. What are your rules about chokeholds? We don't allow chokeholds. But we do allow shooting at a moving vehicle in certain circumstances. What are your rules about de-escalation? And those are really good questions to always ask. And I'm really proud that our community embraces the openness. We have a very transparent police department. But Iman, this is a complicated time. That you asked me specifically about the defund police. I'm sorry if I'm talking too long, but the defund police movement is, you know, you got to say, what do you really mean? What does that mean? Most people, I don't think, mean eliminate the police department. I think most people, when they think about that, are saying, well, let's ask questions about our priorities and where do we spend money and how much do we spend on this or that kind of public safety effort. And, you know, it goes back when I was a kid talking about prevention versus arrest, right? Should we spend more on prevention and less on fixing the problem after it's done? And that's a similar kind of question now, I think. And it's a really good question.
And I think part of this as well, Mayor Hamilton, who is our guest this afternoon, the police rules are on the books. They're not under lock and key, are they, where people can't access what can happen in those policies? They're not hidden away, are they?
No, they're very public, and tonight, there's a Board of Public Safety meeting. That board is a group of five residents who have nothing to do officially with the police department, and they oversee the police department and the fire department. They review hires, they review discipline, they receive reports. I've instituted an every February annual report from police and fire to share all kinds of data, and there's all kinds of data on our website, because I do... Look, transparency is really, really important so people can understand how many arrests were made, you know, how many uses of force have there been. Just to give you an example, we had 54,000 service calls last year for the police department, and 0.5% of those calls had any use of force involved, a couple hundred uses of force, none fatal. But that data all ought to be on there, and how what happened with the use of force, how much, and everything's reported. And the protocols of what kind of, you know, not allowing chokeholds, the protocols of when can you use deadly force, those are all really transparent and need to be, and they always should be subject to question.
Mr. Mayor, how do you handle the angry voices that are coming from a community like you see in other cities and even some here in Bloomington?
The short answer is you listen. You know, you listen to these voices of people who have strong feelings about their interaction with the police department, or sometimes it's strong feelings from a family member of a police officer who wants to be heard. You know, our rally back on June 5th was a terrific day for the community, where thousands of people, active advocates, strong advocates and voices, peacefully marched, and the police officers protected the safety. And I know numbers of those police officers got a lot of positive comments that day. Now, they got some negative comments too, and our officers are used to that. But the main thing is, listen, we just need to listen to each other, try to hear what's underlying the concerns or the viewpoints, and do the best we can to keep building a more inclusive, a better community, and never stop, and recognize, you know, try to let our defensiveness down. Just because we've done this or that over the last few years doesn't mean we can't do better. And I think there's maybe not enough listening overall in our community and our culture these days, and trying to listen to all the different voices that are out there. That's what I would say is real important.
Mr. Mayor, what would you say to somebody about how to take advantage of that listening? If they have some kind of a pick or a grievance, what can they do to be heard?
Well, there are a lot of different ways. There are public meetings, including the Board of Public Safety tonight. I'm sure we'll hear voices raised about suggestions for what should be done. There's anonymous tip line. I put that in place day one of my mayor's office. You can send in an anonymous tip or viewpoint. There's a police complaint or compliment line if you want to call in and make a statement to the police. There's your council members are always, their ears are open to hear concerns, and you know, or the public council meetings, and my office welcomes contact too. I think you can write a letter to the editor, you can call in, you know, your favorite radio station and tell them what you think. I think we need to encourage that listening. Some of it's structured listening, which we've been talking about how to do that in different ways, so that you kind of have a program, so that it's not just a series of 40 people telling what they think, but you try to have interactive dialogue among folks. But let's just listen to each other and get good ideas, and try to be understanding and empathetic with another person's point of view. I think America's history is a history of expanding our notion of who belongs, expanding our notion of freedom and liberty, expanding our notion of where this country, where we go as a country. And that's because we have to keep listening and be empathetic with visions of how we keep improving.
Mr. Mayor, one of the things that you had on your schedule, changing the subject, is a dream of what to do with Kirkwood when it was ready to reopen. This past weekend, that dream started. Give us your evaluation of how dining out on Kirkwood and closing off part of Kirkwood worked.
Yeah, I walked down there kind of late on a Saturday. That was the only time I could get there, late Saturday night. But I did walk through it, and it was delightful. The weather was great. The tables were full. Some places had closed down by 10 o'clock. I hope we keep trying that again. You know, that was really driven by the merchants, the retailers who agreed, because we want to be careful not closing down streets that the retailers and merchants feel would be damaging to them. I hope we keep doing it, and hope we keep trying it during the summer. Kirkwood is a great asset, and figuring out ways to use it more actively, I think, would be good for our community in the long run. And I think trying things out is the right way to do it. I would call it a strong success last weekend, and I think we'll be seeing more of those in the weekends to come.
Go ahead.
And it'll be interesting to see once the weather gets a little bit more cooperative how that's going to work. You really don't lose that many parking spaces. I know probably Adam Wason has the exact number, but just walking down those half blocks, sure. I mean, yeah, maybe there's 24 cars, but there's plenty of room in the summertime where you can find places to park around there. That's not like it's downtown Chicago or some other places.
Right.
I was down there on Saturday afternoon. It was eerie because I was there around 2 o'clock, so it was the hotter part of the day. There wasn't, but here's the good news. What I'm going to try to explain is, if it's hot, there isn't going to be a swell of people where you're going to be worried about, am I 6 feet away? Am I this? Am I that? Am I doing that? So there is a good side. There's always a good side to having that. But I thought it looked great. The bollards look great, and you don't feel fenced in. It feels open, where sometimes those orange barricades always felt like, well, I'm in trouble. I've done something wrong.
Yeah. I hear you. I thought it felt good, too, and looked good. And, you know, let's keep trying things. And I expect I hope we'll see it again this weekend. I think if it were going to be a terrible weather, they might rethink it. But I hope we'll see the experiment again. And now, Glass, I got to apologize because I know Saturday I told you should go try the splash pad.
Oh, we went by it. Don't worry. We went by.
Oh, man. Yeah, I figured I'd hear about that.
But you know what? My daughter was thrilled that you were watering the grass at Switchyard Park. Because she could ride her bike like through a car wash with the sprinklers going. So, okay. So it wasn't.
Well, we had something work.
It was, yes. And it's amazing how many sprinklers, because they're built-in sprinklers, mm-hmm. there's hoses and everything else going on. That's a lot of grass to water. So we kind of went through the car wash that way, but we're excited. We're excited for the splash pad. What needs, is that a health thing that needs to be checked off next to get that open?
Yeah, it's a combination. We had some punch list items, some cracked items that some equipment had cracked. And then there's, I think the health department review is actually tomorrow, Wednesday. And the hope is that we'll have it open for next Monday. That's kind of the target, assuming we can get all the T's crossed and I's dotted. And I felt bad, but I thought about you on time. I'm like, God, he's going to be down there. His kids, he told them, is going to be ready. And then, oh, man. So I'm still looking forward to when I get to turn the switch, but we don't have an exact date. I'm hoping it's Monday that we'll have it in time for the fourth weekend, too.
Excellent. And if not, we'll give you grief on Tuesday.
I'm sure you will.
Santa Hamilton really didn't fail on this one. It was the construction part of it. Now, speaking of something else that started up, the Tuesday market. How'd that go? And
the new location.
Like? Yes.
Yeah, so they opened last Tuesday at Pavilion. I think it went well. They'll be there again tonight. They're adding, you know, to the regular Saturday market and, of course, other markets that are around town. And I just encourage everybody to keep buying from local farmers. They work hard. They're an important part of our economy and our resilience. We all kind of realize, you know, it's a big deal. If the food chain has any little snafus in it, it's pretty momentous occasion. So helping our local food economy do well is good. So hit the markets. We'll continue to enjoy that every Tuesday down at the Switchyard Pavilion. And while you're there, you can check out everything else going on the platform. I even got in a little game of pickleball over the weekend, so that was fun.
I need to refresh myself on the rules of pickleball because it can bounce, it can't bounce. You're on this line, you're on that. I'm just going to go out there and smack it around a little bit. The hoops are open. Everything looks great. We're just trying to get the east side of the park, the entryway done over there, and getting all the grass grown in it. And, boy, there is plenty, plenty of grass. Stay off my lawn.
60-acre park. I know it's we got to let it root down a little bit after it gets placed for 2 or 3 weeks, but we just have to be patient. We want to make sure we get everything right at the end. You know, you don't want to rush the last details, and it's going to be a spectacular asset for the community for decades. So, you know, keep enjoying it and keep taking care of it.
It looks great. And then we'll just watch the workers on Walnut Street. As they are trying to get that end of the park open as well. The orange barrels are up. Give them some extra space to work. Keith?
Amen.
Mr. Mayor, earlier we had Jim Sims on from the City Council, and we were talking about his workload and committees and all the other things. The council's not going to meet for a while, and so I'm being facetious now. So you can kick back, you can put your feet up and wait for a couple of months to do anything. Or the reality is your committees, your departments are doing budget preparation to take to the council, all kinds of other stuff. It doesn't stop in the city, correct?
I have to tell you, this is my fifth year of service. I'm into my fifth year of service as mayor, and I've never had a year that's been this busy. And we've been very busy. You can ask my cabinet how busy we've been in all previous 4 years, but it's been an extraordinary year for, of course, lots of reasons of figuring out how to keep providing the services. And hats off to all the employees and the colleagues in city government who keep the sanitation trucks going and keep the water flowing and keep the potholes filled and housing inspections going and all those things. Public safety officers, of course. You know, the council are all part-time council members. Most of them have other jobs, and they get a well-deserved month off in the middle of the summer, typically. And yes, you're right. While they're gone, we're actually, you know, sharpening our pencils and busy as we can be, getting ready for the budget hearings, which will be in August. And I'm actually planning a pretty major speech next week about kind of where I see our community going with all the challenges we have in front of us. And that's going to kind of tee up some actions I'll be asking the council to take. And so we're as busy as ever. We just don't have as many meetings on Wednesday night with council members.
And the budget, when does that start? I mean, again, I haven't even put my calendar on the wall for 3 months. I don't even know what planet we're on. When do we start thinking about, we know the council takes some time off. When they come back, is that when we start getting into the budget side of things?
Yeah, the big thing for the public is the week of Monday, August 17th to the 20th. So late August is when we do our public presentations of the budget, four nights that week. Now, of course, you can imagine there's a lot leading up to that, but that late August is when we actually present it publicly to the council. So we share data back and forth in a couple weeks before that and talk a lot about it. But that's when it kicks. That's when the hearings happen. And then we have a few weeks and they actually pass the budget in October typically.
Gotcha. So we'll be following along and seeing how that goes.
I should just say, I hope they pass the budget in October. I'll present it to them, and I hope they pass it in October.
And that'll be questions we'll ask you down the road, because we know revenues are not going to be just it's kind of normal as all. No, there's nothing like that anymore. So where do you cut? Who do you tell to cut? You've said in the past, and we'll talk about this next week. I just want to plant the seed now. You said we're not going to cut back on providing services and things like that, but there are things you're going to have to cut back on just from a fiduciary standpoint.
Look, we're going to have some revenue challenges, but we're also in very strong fiscal shape because we've done the right thing by building up our reserves in our rainy day. And when that happens, then in my view, government's a little different from a business, because one of our jobs is to be ready for rainy days and to help keep the economy going and try to help sustain the needed services. And of course, we have to look at, we postpone some things and we defer some things and we decline to do certain things, but we actually step up and do other things, because in my view, our job is to help the economy and help the community get through this downtime. And that's why we build up reserves in a rainy day fund. So we can talk about that in the future and those kind of choices. And that's certainly a big part of the budget process.
Well, it can't all be a splash pad talk. We have to get some serious conversation on this program. Yeah. Mr. Mayor, we appreciate your time as always, and we'll get caught up with you next Tuesday.
Thanks a lot. You guys have a good week.